Welcome to the first episode of the Nick Rowe podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for taking the time out to stop by, tune in and take some time for yourself. It means a great deal to me. A big welcome to each and every one of you who have made a genuine decision to improve, be it in your chosen career, your business, or just to be a better human. My name is Nick Rowe and I will be your host for the next 45 minutes or so. This week's episode is brought to you by RJB Design. Who are RJB Design, you may ask? Well, let me share a little more with you. RJB Design prides itself on a simple philosophy. Suits made by individuals for individuals. Owned and run by Kiwis husband and wife, Ronald and Natasha, they have built a wonderful shop in the heart of the CBD here in Auckland. They not only dress royalty, politicians, lawyers, executives, but give customers a wonderful experience. And as listeners to Nick Rowe podcast, we have a very special first episode gift just for you. More to come later on, so listen up. My purpose for these podcasts is to uncover thoughts, discover the why, and ultimately dig deeper than anyone else has ever done in the pursuit of helping you, the listener, to improve. I have a number of interesting thought-provoking ideas to bring to you. Just to keep things nice and simple, my podcast will always be conversations, not interviews, conversations with some of the best, most underrated, worldly, dedicated, passionate and experienced professionals from close to home here in New Zealand and some from far away. Finally, it's here. I've been thinking and contemplating doing a podcast for what seems like a lifetime. I set up Rowe Career Coaching with a simple goal, my goal to help individuals, small groups and organisations improve, and the community is growing. So thank you for being part of this. But today it's about bringing words to life with a voice. Sit back, relax and enjoy. We have a lifetime of adventure to go on. So why didn't I do it before today? Simple. For some reason, I couldn't muster the inner belief to give it a go. Something more important would always get in my way. Many people have asked me to do this. So here we go. Episode one. Boy, podcasting. There is so much to it. Over the last few months, whilst coaching some amazing individuals, I've been spending every spare minute researching this new world. So I'm thrilled to be actually getting started. This is my virgin moment. It feels liberating, free, and totally in line with my promise and commitment to you. I am keen to see how we can grow this community over the next few years. So feel free to share this around your friends, family, work colleagues. Everybody is welcome here. So what is a podcast? If you ask most folk on the street, I'm sure you would get a variety of responses. Some here in New Zealand wouldn't have a clue. I know when I have been lining up my guests, some have never heard of such a thing. To me, a good podcast is like an audio book, something that brings words to life and ideas that will help you. Look, we'll never be super studio polished. They will be raw and from the heart. My guests will not be prepped with heaps of questions, but I will give them an overview of things you, the listener, want to hear about. You may hear dogs barking in the background. This is because my office, which some of you have visited, is a 20-foot shipping container. It's not soundproofed. So, at the moment, it's not insulated. What the hell am I doing this for in a shipping container? Look, my office sits in front of the house in Auckland's North Shore. And like many family, our neighbours also have dogs. So here's my first commitment to you. I will assure Jaya, our dog, has been walked well and truly before any guests show up. I really hope this is recording and coming out nice and clear to you. Sorry if it's not, but I promise to do everything I can to improve. At the moment, I don't have any help pulling my podcast together. So if you know any great podcast gurus located in Auckland, I would truly appreciate an intro to them. Thanks so much. I'm still getting my head around this mindful of buttons, volumes, controls, microphone systems. We have a brilliant guest speaker joining us today. I will introduce you to him very soon. Look, the sound's a bit echoey. I've not got everything dialed in, but rather than wait for it to all be perfect, I woke up this morning and just wanted to get started. We have a long journey to go on together, and I hope you will walk alongside me and continue to improve. For the record, I have no goal, no long-term strategy or five-year business plan for these podcasts. My focus remains 100% on being the best husband, dad, and coach I can be. And like many of you, we are all juggling a lot of things at the moment. The plan, just like training for my first Ironman, is to start slow, real slow, put one foot in front of the other and see where we go. I know that over time I will find my voice and get a good sense of what you, the listener, wants from me. Important news though, this is really important. If you're looking for a podcast that will help you get rich quick, understand the five steps to being the best leader in the world, or take these three pills and your life will definitely change, then look, I'm really sorry this podcast might not be for you. What I'm saying is if you are looking for a quick fix around your career or your business, my podcast may not be the best one for you. Good things take time. Our guests that are coming on to the podcast have a wealth of professional knowledge, either learnt by trial and error, via the textbook, or just by sheer guts and determination. I know they will want to part knowledge, ideas, and thoughts just for you, so stay tuned. Give it a few months. I will never change. I will never charge you, the listener, for these podcasts. I'm committed to doing these free of charge. It's really important to me that I can share and bring to life interesting views and thoughts. So every episode will have a theme, an idea, and a concept that you can either tune in or not so tune into. Please let me know what you think. Feel free to share this. In fact, if you enjoy an episode, I'd truly love it if you would help spread the word. I want to grow this community. You can either embed the audio player on your site if you wish, or download it straight from my website. The podcast is now up via my website, raucareers.co.nz, and also on iTunes. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Linda, for all your help on that. My podcast sessions will run for 30 to 50 minutes. So if you're jumping on the bus, sitting in traffic, as we do up here in Auckland, then sit back and relax. My plan is to provide meaningful conversations across a variety of topics that will help you improve in your career and business. Be you a man, woman, young, old, in work, out of work, starting your career, or heading the world's largest organization. I know you will take comfort in these podcasts, and between us, we'll all improve. You will be able to find links to my guests in our show notes, along with their bios, really useful and interesting reference points that have helped them progress in their career. So don't forget to look out for the show notes, as you will find a great deal of specific content and further reading for you. I hope you enjoyed this first episode. Many more have been planned, and I hope to record at least 2-3 a week, but we'll see how we go. I want to introduce you to a really special guest. I think we will try and get him on every now and again, time permitting. I know he's a busy man, but I really appreciate his thoughts, his perspective, and his knowledge. So I know his views will help also you to improve. He's been sitting so quietly next to me. I want to keep his name in confidence. I want to keep his name in confidence. So on that note, may I introduce you to the Everyday Executive. Welcome to the show.
Afternoon, Nick. How are you?
I am fizzing with excitement.
Sounds like it. It's exciting times. First one.
First one. Yep. How are you feeling?
Probably nervous. I haven't done a podcast, but I've been in front of people before and I've spoken to audiences. But of course, you don't really know who's listening, how they're listening, what they're listening on, and you can't really see a reaction. So hopefully people out there will enjoy what we're talking about, and hopefully they can give us some feedback and we can work on things as we go.
So I know we've got 8,000 followers from around the world, in the UK, in Canada, Australia and New Zealand. It's really good. And look, I just hope that people get some meaningful information from this conversation. But so you've never done this before?
No, never put myself in front of a podcast before, so we'll both learn something.
So conferences, standing in front of large groups, talk me through that.
Probably the largest group I've presented to is 200, maybe 300 people. It's always something that I think a lot of people, as they maybe go through their management career, become a leader, are often nervous about and think that, you know, this isn't me, I can't do this, or whatever reasons. But I've always found that as long as you practice, as long as you know what it is that you are going to talk about, you're always going to be the one that knows the most about your presentation. You wrote it, you researched it. So you should go in there with a lot of confidence that actually you're going to be able to talk about something that people are either going to listen to, learn something from, but it's going to be something that's going to help your organisation and the individuals within it grow amongst themselves.
So how do you control the nerves? How do you stop standing up in front of 200 people in a conference room and the knees are jangling and the hands are sweating? What's your kind of ritual or preparation behind that?
We all read the ones about, you know, imagine somebody on the toilet or pick somebody to look at and whatever. But what I actually do again is I take 20 or 30 seconds before I'm going up. Somebody's normally introducing you.
Yep.
At that point in time, you know, I'm introducing ABC and their XYZ. So you've got probably 20 or 30 seconds whilst they're doing that. And it's just about taking a little bit of a breath, taking a bit of a step back, and just telling yourself again, you know your presentation, you know your content. The people are there because they want to be there. It's not like a school where you're forced to be there or anything like that. They're there because they want to be there in the main. And they're wanting to listen to what you have to say. So be confident, you've been prepared, and out you go. Just get on and do it.
So I've seen you present in Auckland. I think it's fantastic. But do you typically deaf by PowerPoint? Do you freefall? How do you deliver your message? What's your kind of, what works best for you?
I try and make sure that there isn't too much content on PowerPoint, mainly because of the fact that people start reading the PowerPoint and they may or may not be listening to you because they're reading in front of you or wherever it is. And obviously, if you give people a content pack as well, they may have flipped through it beforehand and they've then got a view, I suppose, on what you may be saying rather than taking it in real time. So I try and make sure that if I'm going to use slides or something to illustrate a point, I try and find a real life example of what I mean. So if we're talking about changing a procedure or looking at something differently, you know, you would maybe use something along the lines of the Wright brothers. You know, they wanted to fly, so how do we go about that? We haven't done that before. Or people had flapped their arms with wings on. So it's about how do we look at something differently, like use to actually just illustrate that point rather than using 10,000 words on it.
And try and grip the moment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sitting down for a long period of time is often difficult for people.
So busy.
Yeah, they're so busy, or they are... there's a reason why they don't want to sit down. They might have a sore knee or whatever it is. There's always a reason why sitting down in one place, people don't necessarily want to be there. So the more interesting you can make it with not just the sound of your voice and other people helping to illustrate your points for you, I think the stronger it can be.
I got invited a couple of weeks ago to see and listen to Nigel Owens. He's the Welsh ref. I think he's ref the World Cup in South Africa. He's a fantastic referee and he was really good at just taking people on a journey, telling a story, sharing a story from his childhood, growing up in a village of 110 people, 115 people, all the way through to today and the battles that he's faced. But one thing I kind of took from that presentation was just listening to how people tell stories is more powerful than a death by PowerPoint. Over the last few months, I've been sending out my weekly blogs through the website. And some of them have been really specifically aimed at executives and leaders. Where the buck stops, everything stops with the exec. The feedback I've been getting has been really supportive and individuals have found some really useful insights and ideas and tips on how they can keep themselves moving. So look, I've seen you present. I know a little bit about your journey or your pathway to executive, but maybe for the listeners, why don't you just share with them a little bit about your career so far?
I emigrated to New Zealand late 90s, and interestingly, the field that I was in overseas, you didn't really need too many qualifications here in New Zealand to be able to do it, which was a bit of a surprise to me. It's a highly regulated industry in the UK. So I took a bit of a step back and decided, well, okay, what is it that I want to do? What do I know? What do I enjoy doing? So took a base level role really within an organisation and just went back working hard. The way that I've always looked at it, if you take some steps back within your career, is that if you truly believe that you're, how do I say this, not better than what that position is or something like that, it's that you should be very, very good at it. And I was lucky enough to be able to use the skills that I'd learned prior to that to be able to really stand out and shine and be amongst the high performers within that particular team. That got me noticed, as a lot of these things do within the wider and larger organisation. So I was asked to go and look after, a burgeoning high-value client book for this particular organisation as a relationship manager. Again, was able to use some of the skill base to be able to get myself noticed, I suppose, and then managerial career starts and you move through from there. And probably one of the things that I suppose I've learned along the way is that as a staff member, I was very technically proficient. I knew where to go, I knew where to look for things, I knew what the policy was, I knew how to use the computer system, what the process was and all those sorts of things. As I moved up that managerial ladder, I suppose, I really did find out that some of that's not actually relevant. As you become a manager and then in turn a leader, what I suppose I mean by that is that if you're managing a group as a supervisor or a team leader, there's some different skills needed than if you're at a C-suite level or a general manager type level and things like that.
Hmm. That's a good starting point. A lot of guys come to me and from a coaching capacity, and the first thing I start off with is, well, what do you know? Let's start with the foundations. We can all improve. We can all learn. We can all go on courses. We can all get on Dr. Google and find out things. But really, unless you know what your foundations are, what you bring, what you really truly understand and know, that's really the starting point for anyone's career. Is that fair to say or not?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I knew very early on that anything involving building or any sort of, I suppose, I'm not going to say hard manual labour or anything like that. Really wasn't. I can't bang a nail straight. I can't. I can measure seven times and still can't. So, I knew what I thought I knew, and I just started to try and concentrate on what I thought my strengths were at that particular time. And, I've been lucky enough to be able to move industries as well as I've moved through my career. And I've had sort of my fourth industry now. And I've always been able to move sideways into a strategic leadership role within and across industries. And so, but when it fundamentally comes down to it, somebody asked me the other day, isn't it hard to move? I said, no, I'm still in the people business. Still have staff and I'm serving a group of customers. And as long as you can remember that type of context, it's then how your skills fit in with that wider and broader strategic direction of the company that you're working for.
That's a really interesting point. So many people come and they kind of sit down and say, oh, look, I'm a manager, I'm a leader, I'm a head of department, or I'm whatever. And I've always worked in the retail industry, the banking industry, the FMCG industry. How do I transition myself from one industry to the next? Now, I've known your career for a number of years, and you as you say, you've transitioned a number of different industries. So by doing that, transitioning those industries, what do you think's given you a bit more understanding of being that leader you are today? What's really helped you? What have you kind of learned or picked up along those environments you've been exposed to?
What's really helped me? I think early on, I was lucky enough to have somebody as a mentor who sort of really brought home that point to me about forget what you've learned, forget what your task-orientated or task-based mind wants you to do as you become a manager and a leader. Yes, it's great that you know the policy for, panning out widgets or whatever it is that you do, but actually you need to understand whether you need to hand out widgets. You need to understand what's the best way to hand out widgets. You need to say, actually, widgets are last year, and now we're going to do, what's that new thing, the fidget spinners or whatever it is. That's where your place in the structure needs to be. And you kind of need to let go that the people that are doing that role every day are the experts.
So trust.
Yeah, trust. Trust them, empower them to be able to make those decisions with you, for you. So I sort of work on a whole premise of there's some things that as a leader you just decide and that's the route that we're going on.
And the buck will stop with that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot of things that you can do. If you ask your team, they're able to tell you that actually A, B, C, D, E doesn't work. They're not doing D because they want to spite you as a manager. They're doing D because it doesn't make sense. So listen, learn, and give them that empowerment to be able to make some of those changes. And sometimes they'll make some mistakes and they'll get some things wrong, but so do you.
Yep.
Maybe we should remember that and not be afraid of making those mistakes.
It's funny how many people stand up in front of their organization as a chairman, as an executive, and say, I stuffed up. I've got it wrong. this is what I thought would be the outcome, but actually I should have listened to more people. Mm. Have you ever had to do that yourself, or have you kind of sat back and got a few people around you and say, listen, I had a view, I thought it was the right thing to do, but I should have really listened to you guys as the experts?
I'm not going to sit here and say I've never got things wrong, because I'd be a liar. Of course I have.
Yeah.
I think as we learn things now, and it's certainly one of the things that as an executive, as a manager, as a leader, it has really changed for us now, I think, is that the availability of information and the speed that we're doing things means that often we make snap decisions, we make quick decisions. Everybody's looking at you, you're the boss, tell us where we want to go. We're on board, where do you want to go? So we can often make snap judgments. So one of the things that I've always tried to make sure I do is A, ask more questions.
Okay.
You know, really drill down and understand, because what might have worked a year ago, the circumstances might be different today. What's changed? What's different from the last time you had to make this decision? And we're hardwired to act quickly. That's our brain. It's the fight or flight mode that we all have within us. So if you can just take that breather, ask a few more questions, dig a bit deeper, make a decision. It doesn't matter if you get it wrong. Fail fast. Find out. That's what the agile stuff is about. Fail fast. If you get it wrong, that's fine. As long as you know the reason why you did it. There's nothing worse, I think, than making a decision and then asking yourself, why did that go wrong? You need to know what you put in. You need to know why you put it in. And it makes that question a whole lot smaller about why did it go wrong. Well, actually, I didn't know that bit of information. Great. Next time you're faced with this decision, you'll know to ask one more question. It's fairly simple, really.
That's a really fair point. I remember reading I remember writing a blog recently, and it wasn't just about the negatives of, you know, why did something go wrong, but it was also evaluating and really looking at it as why things went right. I think especially here in New Zealand, which is, you know, where we both live and having wonderful lives, it's a lot of us tend not to talk about the successes. We talk about the failings, and I'm really big on, okay, the failings, these things happen, we're going to pick ourselves up, we're going to learn from that, and we're going to grow. But sometimes it's really cool to take a step back and say, well, that went really well as a team, as an individual, as a group, and enjoying those good points of business or as life. But, you know, how many of us sit back and, you know, really do reflect on that and say, wow, that was a really good outcome?
Well, I think there's no reason why you can't celebrate, let's use the ugly word, failure, really, to be honest.
Embrace it.
Because embrace it. If everybody did everything that was expected of them and asked of them, and you didn't achieve what you didn't achieve, you know, you take our own All Blacks, for instance, you know, they've had three shots, I think, at getting 19 in a row. None of them went out there on that last game to say, actually, we're going to stuff this up.
Yeah.
We're going to get it wrong. But they still celebrated the fact that they had the opportunity to be able to do that. And I think there's a lot of things we can learn from things like sports teams, no matter what your leaning is around that, around actually, they go out, they execute, you can still get beaten on the day.
Yep.
That's the way that it is.
So that's life.
Celebrate that. It's life. Celebrate it. Work out what you would do differently. And I've always worked on sort of a bit of a more, better, different, less. What could I do more of? What could I do better? What could I do differently, and what could I do less of? Unfortunately, to do the first three, you often have to do less of something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Again, it's coming back to that point we talked about of know what you did. Because there might be something in there that actually really didn't make much of an impact. Don't do it next time, and do more of something else, or do something else differently.
I get it. Look, we're all really busy. There's lots going on in our lives. We've got family, we've got friends, we've got meetings, we've got deadlines that are put onto us. But what things do you do every day to kind of, I want to use this word in its rawest context, what do you do every day to slow things down?
Yeah, I'm showing my age here. I'd love to be like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, you know, he takes the pill and everything goes slowly, and we can see what's happening and what's going on and things like that, all in slow motion.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't happen
no.
like that. We know that. So what I tend to make sure that I do is, end of every day, I sit down, just take 20 minutes and write down, what did I achieve? And I'll go through my calendar appointments and think, what did I achieve? What came out of those that I'm going to need to use later and those sorts of things? And write myself a bit of a to-do list for the next day. Yeah, some people say, why wait till the end of the day to do it? It's just a way of me.
Works for you.
Clear my mind, really, and not have things sitting there just ticking away when I think about it. And I find that's important because if I'm going to be thinking about something strategically, where we're going next and that, I don't need the fact that I need to send an email to somebody or I need to write a letter about something. Just sitting in my mind, ticking away. Mm. If I put it down on the paper, I'm not going to forget it. So I don't have to worry about it anymore.
So you've offloaded that thought that can kind of wake you up, as it does for many of us.
Yep.
You know, many of our listeners I know around the world will be waking up at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, oh shit, I need to do this. I need to get this thing done, or I need to speak to this person. Yep. And I think what I found from a coaching point of view and coaching people is, you know, at the end of the day, as you say, you write things down, make a little list, whether it's long list or little list of things that are bugging at you, things that you need to get done that is going to help you move on. And then review that thing when you get into the office, wherever you are in the world, first thing in the morning, and then kind of work out things that are priority. You know, I use a traffic light signal, red, amber, green, and really kind of tailoring that to what you need to do as a leader, as an executive.
It's interesting you say that about a traffic light system, because that also can equate across to management of staff as they go through their roles as well. When they first come in and they don't really know the organisation or how you do things, they might be in a red light stage where you actually do have to spend a bit more time with them, or through your staff, give them that help and that you know, help them to grow. They can move into an orange light, they can move into a green light. A green light is really, hey, bring me up if you're going to get yourself into trouble, because I can help you.
Maybe help you a bit quicker.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe help you earlier. Or, yeah, the worst, that's that whole no surprises thing. The worst thing is somebody rings you up and say, did you know?
Ah.
And that half a second pause of, oh, no, you didn't know.
Ouch. Yeah, where do I start?
Yeah, that's right. Where do you start? And where do you go? So once you're in the green light phase, it is, hey, just let me know what's happening, what's going on in that point.
So you still use that traffic light signal, or do you use that in your everyday business life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, it comes back to that. When you're in green light, it's, hey, we're going to discuss things, but you ultimately decide what you're going to do being a staff member. You know, as a manager, I might, or a leader, I might disagree with you. But you're the one that's believes in it. You're the one who feels that it's going to be the best way for you to get the most out of yourself.
You're owning it.
You're owning it.
Yep.
I'd be crazy to try and tell you not to do that. If you're going to give it 120% because you believe in it, go for it. My role in that then is that, how do I make sure you don't run into a brick wall or you don't break something or whatever? So it's more me about exploring, okay, where do you think you're going to push up against some boundaries? Who do I need to be talking to help you out? And I think that's where that change from being technical all the way through that interpersonal space and then through into that conceptual thinking is, if you're able to see what that staff member's thinking, you think, hang on a minute, that's really going to upset the CFO. That's your job to go and talk to the CFO and sort things out in that space, rather than try and teach or do what your staff member wants to do to try and make it happen. And I think that's a big key for me, because I always make sure each week as well on that time management thing is I book some time out for myself each week. Might only be a couple of hours, but you've got to make sure that you actually spend that time doing that. It's all too easy to fill it with phone calls.
Yep.
It's all too easy to fill it with
meetings,
sending emails back to people and things like that. But actually, if it was one of your kids' soccer final, if it was they were singing in the school play, or it was the birth of your first child. It doesn't really matter what it is, you'd find the time to do it. And I think having time and space to do that conceptual thinking is important. Maybe not as important as some of those things we just said, but it's up there in the big scheme of things. And dare I say it, it's actually what your staff expect of you. So therefore, you owe it to them as much as anything to spend that time sitting there doing it.
So two things I'm getting from that is really, and maybe put it in another viewpoint, is it kind of as an executive, as a leader, you are the airbag of the car. You're kind of there to, it's gonna, if it goes off, it's gonna go off. But really trying to allow the staff, the team, the people around you to kind of look at all the dashboard, look at all the signals that are coming at them from people crossing the road to red lights or to whatever, sheep jumping in front of you. So really giving them, maybe if they need it, some heads up guidance on, look, the airbag might go off if you drive through that red light.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can all be hindsight, because
yeah,
it's
2020.
Yep. So really, if you're not up and out of the business on quite a frequent basis, you're not able to start seeing what's going on. Somebody once explained it to me about somebody's got to be on the elephant. I was like, what on earth are you talking about? And he said, well, just imagine, you know, you're going to a new country and it's the first time anyone's ever been there. You've got 20 people hacking through the jungle.
Mm.
How do you know, if you can't see a foot in front of you, whether there's a 100-foot drop, that all these people are just going to go straight over? So someone's got to be on the elephant up above, looking out and going, actually, can we just go left, please? Because this might happen or that might happen. Doesn't mean you're down there with them chopping through the jungle.
Mm.
It means that you're helping them to be as effective and as good as they possibly can be.
So look, we're coming to the back end of the year, and you know, there's lots of change going on in the world. We've got elections here in New Zealand. We've had a new group of people take on different political parties around the world.
Mm.
People here are looking forward to the summer, to the breaks, to spending time with our families and friends.
Mm.
Over the year, we've all seen a lot of change. As an executive, or as our everyday executive, what do you feel has really changed the most over the last year for you?
I went into a new industry, or a new section of a current industry, I suppose, early part of last year, actually. So my end of year last year really was, what am I doing? Why am I here? What is it we're trying to achieve? What is it we want to change? And you really got to, I really asked myself the question of, is why I came into this particular role still a driver for me? So what I mean by that is, I came into a role because I felt that something needed to change, and I felt that both the company that I was going to and my skill set would be able to help change that. And so I sat down and I worked through all those types of pieces and sat down, and thankfully got to the point where I said, yes, actually this is what I want to carry on with. My wife, she sat down and went, right, okay, she's also in a C-suite executive role. But she was sitting down and going through and saying, actually, from a financial perspective, where does she need the business to get to? And what do they want to achieve? Which then led on to, where are we at?
Mm.
Where do we as individuals want to get to financially, and what do we want to achieve? So I think this time of the year, if you can find the time to, whether you're at the batch, whether you know the kids are away on a sleepover, or however you do it, just sit down with someone you know and respect, love, and just talk through those things. You spend so much time at work, we're all spending 50 hours, 60 hours, or more
in some places.
You spend more time with your work colleagues potentially than you do your family members. So it's about taking some time to talk through with them and just really not gaining permission, but getting them, you understand that actually they're saying, yep, this completes you, this helps you, and this is what's going to get you through the next 12 months.
So a bit more around the clarity of why. Clarity of why I'm doing this, what am I doing it for, and where will that ultimately lead me towards? Is that fair?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we deal with volatility at work all the time. We deal with uncertainty, we deal with complexity, we deal with ambiguity.
Mm.
There's so many things that we deal with as executives that make you second guess yourself.
Constantly.
Yeah. So why not sit down? Doesn't have to be once a year, it could be twice a year, it could be quarterly, but why not just sit down and say, actually, is this still the reason why I want to get out of bed in the morning? Am I hitting, if you're hitting snooze four times,
it's telling you something, isn't it?
It's telling you something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not ready to jump out of bed and face the day. And that only comes from looking in the mirror, and that, you know, your friends and your family will be the ones that'll tell you that.
I think that's some good lessons in there. And you know, people take stock of their financial position. They may sit down with a finance person and plan ahead, or what that might look like. So, you know, even in your career, even in business, just say, hey, we press the pause button, turn the phone off, however much we hate doing it, turn the emails off, shut the computers down, and go and have a walk in the fresh air. And sometimes, excuse me, sometimes that kind of time out just gives you time just to kind of think a little bit more personally about yourself. So taking that step forward, and as a manager, as a leader, you've probably hired many people in your career, and you've seen people develop and grow from staff to managers to leaders. What pieces of advice would you share with our listeners around, you know, transitioning from a manager, say, into a leadership role when it's your first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes back to what we sort of touched on a little bit earlier. It's around understanding and knowing that your skill set needs to change. On a personal basis, when you're a staff member, there's a theory about different types of power that people have and things like that. I don't know the name of it, can't remember it. But ultimately, we pride ourselves on being the best at our job.
Yep.
So we're an expert at it. We like the fact that other people come and ask for our help and things like that. And that's wonderful because that's what you do every day. Mm. Knowing once you become a manager that some of that you've got to let go of, you're not going to be the expert anymore. Your role now is to make sure the person that came in after you and others are the experts at what.
So leaving it in a better position.
Yeah. Breaking down those doors. I always say to people that 70% of success as an individual is down to you and 30% is down to somebody else. So if you think about that as a manager or then as a leader, you're now the 30%. You're not the 70.
Yep.
The person above you is the 30% to you, but you've now got to work out how 100% of the time you're that 30% to somebody else, which means that you've got to find ways to get them the skills that they need. You've got to get them to understand whether or not they're clear about what they do. So if people are clear about what they want to achieve or what the business needs to achieve, you as a leader or manager have made sure they're capable of fulfilling the tasks that are set out for them, they're going to be motivated to do it. So your role is that around that capability, and that's the 30%. They'll put the 70% of effort in, and you put the 30% of effort in. But it's tough to do.
Yeah, I see a lot of it in business, and you've got a manager or a leader sitting there going, oh, I've got little Johnny doing this, but actually, you know, I could probably do it in half the time, and I know it will be accurate, and I know it's the right thing to do. Mm. So my kind of advice is, well, why have little Johnny sitting there? Mm. Why have a team around you if you're not willing to allow them to, you know, to fall over?
I'm no singer, but let it go.
Let it go.
It is really about that. And again, it comes back to it's hard to do, but you're going to be getting so much more information that comes in to you that you haven't seen before. You don't have enough brain power to be able to take all of that in and still keep being the expert at what it is you do. So one thing that I tend to do is, if I get promoted, is I'll say to somebody that's coming in after me, if I'm within the same business, say, look, this is what my manager used to like to see from me. It's part of the reason why I got promoted. So here's some places that you can find that information. Here's some things that I used to read. Here's some things that I used to do. Often what I find is that they become better at my old job than I ever did. And that to me is success, more than me keep going in and saying, actually I used to do it this way.
Do it my way. This is the way you should do it.
Doesn't matter.
I hear it so often.
Yep.
It's really kind of important, that point of, you know, as you say, let things go, let others bring their own kind of voice or their own view to the market or to the conversation. You're passing your knowledge, you're sharing your knowledge, you're passing information to others to help them if that's what they want. But how do you kind of grapple with things that you don't know much about, the unknown? You know, you sit around the boardroom and there's a catastrophe that's happened or there's a really good thing that happened. How do you kind of get your head around things you don't know about? What do you do?
I've always been quite proactive in finding mentors,
okay,
particularly in spaces that I don't know something about.
Mm.
So my first industry change, I moved from a service-based industry to a wholesaling industry, fast-moving consumer goods,
yep,
supplying a product. And again, I knew my strengths were we have customers and we provide the service, and it just happens to be a physical product. What I knew about supply chain, I'd read in a book, and what I remembered, you could probably write on the back of a postage card, there wasn't a lot there.
Yep, yep.
So what I did was I just went and sought out the best person within our business and said, right, for X amount of time, every week, I'm going to come and spend some time with you. I'll walk a little bit in your shoes and I'm going to understand what it is that we do. Not because I want to be you, not because I want to be the best, I just don't want to make silly mistakes.
Yep.
But also, once you know who that person is and they're teaching you, it's fantastic for being able to delegate some of the authorities to them. gives them a great feeling that people are coming to them and saying, how do I do this? What do I need to do? But it also gives you that ability to be able to say, hey, look, I understand this and I get it, but I've been able to delegate some of that through whatever Fred or Sally or George says, it goes within reason, of course. But you know then that you've, it's your way, or sorry, my way of being able to get that trust that the person I'm passing it off to or moving it through to is able to do a good job.
I've got a list of questions from people that have emailed me, and over the next few months I've got some really strong subject matter experts coming on a variety of topics, so definitely kind of tune in over the next few months to listen to certain topics that as the everyday executives just shared with us. So look, I think we should wrap this up for now. It's been going for 40 minutes, probably, hopefully everyone's got to work, got out of their traffic, got out of their bus, but look, what kind of final thought would you like to leave with us around the future of an executive? Is it same? Is it going to be completely different for executives over the next 5-10 years? Or, you know, are there any kind of things that you're seeing that you're starting to embrace and it's really helping you?
I think the things that excite me are we've truly got the technology now to be able to remotely manage teams. I'm not saying I'm an advocate of if you're in country A that your team should be in country C or D or whatever it is, but you know, certainly be able to remotely manage teams, which can reduce stress on families, reduce stress on the individual. The information and power distance between that is so much shorter now. Your staff are able to learn an awful lot more because they're out there Googling it or whatever they're doing it. So that ability to be able to share information and share the right information, people are a lot more ready to ask questions, and people are a lot more ready to challenge. And as much as that can be difficult in some realms, military for example, or something like that, where it's do this, do that, I think within business that's a fantastic thing. Admit to yourself you don't know everything. Admit to yourself you're never going to know everything. And as long as you're able to really listen to what your staff are saying, you're not obligated to say yes. You can still say no, but at least you then can tell the staff member the reasons why you might be saying no. And it might be they go away and bring something else back. But I think that real, as much as I think it's unnerved some managers, it's not so much information as power anymore. It's about what we do with it and who does something with it, rather than an executive saying, go do it.
Brilliant.
It's staff members going, we will do, or we can do.
Fantastic.
For the right reasons.
No, that's fantastic. Look, let's finish up today. Look, thank you so much for personally taking the time out of your busy day and being part of this conversation. I'd love to get some feedback from our listeners anywhere around the world on what you've taken from this, what's really helped you, or what things you might do a little bit differently over the next couple of weeks. So thank you very much, and I know I want to get you back on and maybe discuss more things in more specific topics if that's what the listener wants to hear from us.
Yeah, happy to do it, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Look, finally, thanks to today's sponsor, RJB Design. As mentioned in our intro, we have a wonderful gift to give to you, the listener. Customers who pop into the store, which is located on the corner of Custom Street East in the Auckland CBD, and purchase a made-to-measure suit, and may I say, it's a New Zealand made-to-measure suit made from Dorme cloth, beautiful cloth. We're going to give you a free handmade shirt, colour of your choice. Look, I know the value of these shirts run into hundreds, so thank you, Ronald. Thank you, Natasha, for supporting the Nick Rao podcast. I really do appreciate this. And listeners, if you pop into RJB Design, mention the Nick Rao podcast, Ronald and Natasha and Quija will look very much after you. So please just mention us and have fun. I hope you've enjoyed this. Well, that's it for our first episode. Be sure to tune in next time. Don't forget to email me. I'll put up my direct email on the show notes, but it's nick@raocareers.co.nz. If I could be of any help or service to you. Wherever you are in the world, take care, look after yourself and those that you care about. See you all soon on the Nick Rao podcast.